I'm the son of Korean immigrants, so I grew up actually in a Korean home. My parents, they came to the States to do higher education, and so they met in bucolic Kentucky. My dad, I think I've told this story before, my dad went to Transylvania University. My mother was at this thing called the Lexington Theological Seminary, and they were 10 minutes away from each other, and I imagine that it was very romantic, although it's hard for me to imagine. It imagined that it was very romantic, and they met each other, and they were there, and they fell in love, and here they are here now, and they raised me in a Korean home, mostly Korean home. And so they spoke in Korean to each other. We ate Korean food, which actually I thought was the worst. It's like, Korean, man, can't we have like cheese sandwiches and bologna and hot dogs and whatnot? But actually, we just ate the best food growing up. The best. I just didn't know it until later. All of you are like bananas about Korean food right now, right? Like, Korean barbecue, let's go to Korean barbecue. I'm like, man, I had that every week at home. And I thought, man, this is just so ordinary, but I realized it's so special. And my mother is actually a really good cook. I grew up eating the finest of food, didn't really know it. And every now and again, we would go to Korea. We would, when I was a kid, when I was a middle schooler, we'd spend months in Korea during the summer. And the interesting thing about Korea is that Korea really loves America. And so I'd always get asked these questions, like, what is Korea like? Or what is America like? Or more often than not, it was like a question like, how do you compare Korea to America? Like, how are we doing? And I'm like a middle schooler, just like this squat Asian middle schooler. I'm like, well, I don't know. Like, well, what about our commercials? Do you think our commercials are as good as American commercials? And I'm like, I don't think we think about it like that in America. They were like, you know, what's America like? You know, we watch the shows, but is it similar to the shows? And I'm like, actually, it's quite different. But what is it like? And here, I'm a little kid, and I'm being asked these questions by my relatives. And here's one thing that I know. I knew even back then. I was a kid, and I knew that even back then. I knew that if I were to tell them, like, propositions about America, it wouldn't have worked. I knew that if I were to tell them, not that I would, being like a 12-year-old, but if I would have told them about America, well, America is bound up in this philosophy or this way of thinking about how people relate to other people in the world called individual exceptionalism, they would have been like, what? Or if I told them that we were like a capitalistic country, they would have been like, we're trying to become one too. And be like, well, maybe you should reconsider. Or if I told them about the erosion of truth happening in postmodernism, they would have been like, well, we don't really understand that. And it wouldn't have satisfied them anyway. I would have had to tell them stories, right? So if you're telling someone something about someone else or a place that you've been, you tell them stories, right? You don't tell them, well, it's like 82 degrees every day. You're like, I mean, that like sort of helps, but it helps a little bit better when it's like the palm trees just swaying in the wind when you wake up. As Chicagoans, no idea what that means. But you know what I'm talking about, right? So I would tell stories about America like, well, I go to one neighborhood and have restaurants from every culture, to tell them about America being a melting pot. Or I tell them how we elected a leader from the business world to run our country because we thought that if you can run a business, they can run a country. Just let that sit right there. But no, I mean, it's interesting if you think about it, right? If you think about it, like, we actually believe, I mean, this is how bound up in terms of market economy that we are. We actually believe that if you run a business, you can run a country. Turns out that, well, I'm not going to say anything. Anyway, I'll leave it at that. Here's the thing. Stories tell us more than propositions do about what things are like, right? And this is why we are going to tell some stories over the next 5 to 6 weeks. We're going to tell the stories that Jesus did. Stories were used by Jesus, the master storyteller, to describe his country. The country where his father reigned, the kingdom of heaven. So we're coming off this like 3-week series about the nature of salvation. I won't give a lengthy summary. We've been like very high-minded and theological as we've been doing this, yes? We've been talking about, like, if we were to encapsulate the gospel in one sentence, what sentence would that be? Well, that sentence would be Jesus, the crucified and resurrected or crucified King of love, is making all things new. Let's say that together. Jesus, the crucified King of love, is making all things new. The central idea of that series was that for some of us, or maybe most of us, our gospel is maybe small or maybe incomplete, that our gospel is like almost entirely focused on the atonement, on Jesus dying for our sins, whereas we looked at over the last 3 weeks, the Bible being this beautifully complex, rich story about the beginning of all things and the end of all things. He's making all things new. We really like this sentence. We've been given some feedback about it. We are certainly open to feedback. But we really like this sentence because this sentence has this hopeful, I guess, anticipation or expectation of what's happening now and what's to come. And we also like this sentence because it's a salvation to or for something, not just from something. And what is that to or what is that for? What are we saved to? What are we saved for? Well, we're saved to or we're saved for the kingdom of heaven. Here's how the Apostle Paul talks about this in his letter to Colossians. For he has rescued us from the dominion of darkness and brought us into the kingdom of the Son he loves, in whom we have redemption, the forgiveness of sins. So we are saved into the kingdom of the Son he loves. And so we want to talk about what is that kingdom? And we want to do it in the way that Jesus did. He told parables. He told stories about the kingdom. So we want to look at those parables over the next four or five weeks or so. We want to look at those parables and we want to talk about what is the kingdom of heaven like. Before we begin, before we look at the parables. We're just going to talk like theologically about what the kingdom is. And we're just going to do this for a little bit. We're going to talk about what parables are for a moment, and then we're going to dive in, all right? So what is the kingdom? Well, simply put, the kingdom, if you've been here for a while, you've heard this definition before. The kingdom is, simply put, the rule and reign of God. It's the place where he's sovereign, where his will is inviolable, where his will is perfectly and always carried out. Matthew, the book that we're going to look at, the writer Matthew calls this heaven. Heaven is the place where God's will is perfectly and always carried out. And when we think of heaven as a place to go when we die, we often overlook the fact that the biblical writers mostly meant God's kingdom when they were talking about heaven. They did not really mean our final eternal destination. The Bible also talks about heaven this way. It talks about heaven as the place that overlaps with our time now and can break in any moment, which is what happened when Jesus was here on earth, which is why he said, the kingdom of heaven is near, or the kingdom of heaven is among us. You could even say that Jesus is heaven on earth. But all of that theological, high-minded, propositional truth doesn't actually give us that much information about what the kingdom of heaven is like, which is why Jesus told stories or parables. He used these word pictures because they were memorable, because they were easy to hold on to, even if they were hard to grasp. But he also told them parables because of the fundamental nature of the kingdom, that it's a mystery, it's a secret. And now among them, they have someone who will divulge the secrets, Jesus. They have among them the kingdom's best representative, its king, Jesus. And essentially what Jesus tells us in Matthew 13 is that the kingdom is a mystery until you get to know me, Jesus. The kingdom is a mystery until we get to know its best representative, Jesus. Until you know Jesus, you don't really know what the kingdom is. In other words, knowing what the kingdom is requires nearness or intimacy with Jesus. In other words, propositions, man, they don't help us to know what the kingdom of heaven is like. You got to know the king. And each parable that we're going to look at over the next like 5 weeks or so asks the confrontational question, do you know the king? Do you know him? Here's how Jesus puts it in Matthew 13. Because the knowledge of the secrets of the kingdom of heaven has been given to you, his disciples, right? But not to them. They're asking, the disciples are asking, why do you speak in these parables? We don't understand them. And he says this, because the knowledge of the secrets of the kingdom of heaven has been given to you, but not to them. Why was it given to the disciples? It was given to the disciples because he was near them. It was given to the disciples because they had relationship with them. Was it privileged information? Not at all. The invitation to understand the secrets of the kingdom through the parables is such a gracious one that all you need to understand them is to say, Jesus, be my friend. Jesus told the meaning of the parables to those who were with him without prejudice. He told it to a zealot. He told it to one who would later betray him, which will become important in a moment. What do you need to understand these parables? Well, you need to know the king. The king teaches us the nature of the kingdom, which makes a lot of sense, doesn't it? Like if I went and talked to my relatives about America, I mean, it would mean one thing. But if somebody who was a dignitary or somebody who had authority went and talked to my relatives about what America was, it would mean something different, wouldn't it? And so, we are going to look at these parables as an invitation to draw near to the King of Love, whose kingdom is our country. And so we're going to look at two very short parables today, so short they might be called metaphors. What do these parables tell us about the kingdom of God? All right, so we're going to look at Matthew 13. By the way, all of these parables are going to be from the book of Matthew, parables of the kingdom of heaven. We're going to look at like 5 or 6 different ones of them to take us to the summer. All right, so we're going to start in verse 31. He told them another parable. The king, by the way, have you ever read this, the Gospels, and realized, why did you explain some of the parables and not the others? Does anybody ever notice that? I just noticed that I've been a Christian for many, many years, and I noticed that I was reading these parables. I was thinking, why, you just explained some of them and not all of them. It would be really helpful if you explained the wedding banquet, because I have to preach on it in like a few weeks. But he didn't. Anyway. He told them another parable. The kingdom of heaven is like a mustard seed, which a man took and planted in his field. Though it is the smallest of all seeds, yet when it grows, it is the largest of garden plants and becomes a tree so that the birds come and perch in its branches. He told them still another parable. The kingdom of heaven is like yeast that a woman took and mixed into about 60 pounds of flour until it worked all through the dough. 60 pounds of flour feeds about 100 people. It's a lot of dough. Jesus spoke all these things to the crowd in parables. He did not say anything to them without using a parable. So was fulfilled what was spoken through the prophet. I will open up my mouth in parables. I will utter things hidden since the creation of the world. Right? So two parables. I, Jesus, will open his mouth in parables. Jesus will utter things hidden since the creation of the world. And so we're going to look at these things that have been hidden since the creation of the world. And we're going to open them up and have a meal together. So here's the one thing that these two parables tell us about the kingdom of God. One thing. It begins small and gets really big. That's the one thing. It begins really small. It starts like inauspiciously. Then it blooms into something of massive size and significance with abundant, incredible life and power. It begins small, blooms into something really big. That's the one thing about the kingdom of heaven that Jesus wants us to know today, all right? So it starts small. So imagine this. You are with Jesus. You're one of his disciples. You're a Jew. Your country, the blessed nation of Israel, God's chosen people, has lived with historical oppression for the last 500 years. And we're not even talking about the exile in Egypt years before that. All right, so you lived under oppression. And even though there were occasions, some like seasons where there was respite, like under Persian rule, you were allowed to return back from captivity, you know, and you're like, man, this is going to be it. The kingdom is coming back to us. Your country then instead changed hands, often in very bloody, violent ways. And now you're under Roman rule. And here on the scene arrives Jesus. The crowds are coming after him. He demonstrates his authority and power. Even when he proclaims and speaks, everybody's like, wow, he talks different. He's got a lot of authority about him. I mean, he heals people. He casts demons out, demonstrating his power and authority over the evil forces of darkness, right? And you're thinking, man, this is it. This is our king. This is it. So you start sharpening your sword. You're like, man, I am ready. You're a zealot, and you're thinking, in your zealotry, the kingdom, man, it's coming back to Israel. So you put all of your hopes and dreams, you tell your parents, you tell your grandparents, look, I think this is it. This is the one. And then Jesus says, the kingdom of heaven is like a mustard seed, the smallest of all seeds. And you're like, wait, what? And then he says, it's like leaven, working its way slowly through dough. This is not a hostile take back over. This is like a plant growing. Anybody ever watch a plant grow? Anyone besides Matt Ryan? Matt, that's your job, to watch plants grow, right? So we have this little yucca tree in our home. It's my son's. It's his pet. Because I'm allergic to all animals, as I talked about a few weeks ago, fairly allergic. It's a convenient excuse, at least. But we have like this yucca tree at our home. My son loves it. It's his pet. He waters it. He obsesses over it. And we were looking at each other, and we were looking at. He calls the pet Yuki. So we're looking at this tree, and I said, hey, Nathaniel, Yuki's grown. And we looked at it, and we're like, it has grown. I mean, like an inch, maybe. I mean, it was a little taller. I mean, we bought one of those small ones, so it's a little bit taller than the end table that it was near. We looked at it, and we couldn't even believe that it grew. It grew, like, literally without our noticing it. Same story with yeast and bread. I mean, like if you've been one of the many to bake during the pandemic. Anybody bake during the pandemic? Raise your hand high. How many of you let your sourdough starter die? Anyone? Yes, some of us, we've had that. Same story with yeast though, right? Like if you put yeast in dough, you can't actually see the bread rising. So what does this tell us about the kingdom of heaven? It tells us a lot. First of all, it tells us that if you, in your zealotry, want a violent uprising, you're going to be sorely disappointed. I mean, like, history tells us that every kingdom on earth establishes its authority and influence through violence, through conquest, through war. And even if there is peaceful negotiation, the specter of violence hangs over every discussion, right? I mean, people normally die in the establishment of earthly, kingdomly authority, right? I mean, just look at what's happening with Ukraine. Russia wielding its might. Though it's not winning, insofar as we can tell, people are dying daily. This is how the kingdoms of the world advance, through death. But this is not the kingdom of heaven. The kingdom of heaven advances so slow you can't even see that it's growing. The kingdom of heaven advances through chesed and shalom, through loving kindness and peace. How many of you know it takes time for love to grow? Like if you've ever been in love, you know that when it's quick, it's usually infatuation, right? Some of you are nodding, going, yes, absolutely, infatuation, right? You know that love and peace take time to grow. Peace works the same way. It grows at the speed of trust. It grows at the speed of surrender. And surrender and trust, they do not happen quickly. And consider this also. I mean, just when they thought the kingdom of heaven might actually be breaking in, Jesus was crucified. So sometimes the advance of the kingdom of heaven looks like losing. I introduced this concept from Martin Luther last year during our Story of the Bible series. If you look at the way that power is exercised in the world, if you look at the kingdoms of the world, the kingdoms of the world advance through what is called right-handed power. Remember talking about right-handed versus left-handed power? Right-handed power is use the force to get the result that you want. In other words, like more tanks, more guns, more planes, more bombs. Like right-handed power is Hiroshima. Right-handed power is the German Holocaust. But that's not the way of Jesus. Jesus, the mustard seed. Jesus, the kingdom of heaven. His kingdom advances so small, from such a small beginning, that you can't even notice that it's actually growing. It's left-handed power, which, as the bishop, Episcopalian priest Robert Farrar Capon puts it, left-handed power is precisely paradoxical power, power that looks for all the world like weakness, intervention that seems indistinguishable from non-intervention. It is the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. embracing nonviolent resistance. It's Nelson Mandela. It's a man crucified on the cross. It's a kingdom coming slowly, not in conquest, but almost hidden. And aren't you glad? Aren't you glad that that's the way the kingdom of heaven advances? Aren't you tired of big, bombastic, coercive leaders? Aren't you tired? Some of you are so tired, your eyes are closed. And by that, I mean you're meditating on the wonderful truth of the kingdom of heaven, you know? But aren't you glad? I mean, listen. Whenever you see bald, right-handed power, I think that Jesus would say, man, the dominion of darkness is at hand, not the kingdom of heaven. I mean, God can use it, to be sure. I mean, he uses all things for the good of his people. But the mustard seed and the yeast tell us that the kingdom moves slowly. It moves hiddenly. It moves like in the secret place. It's not stupendous or spectacular. It's not held up by or with celebrity. It's not something that grows huge overnight. And I think there's a hidden promise in this passage, in this parable. I think the hidden promise is that Jesus is saying, I am never going to abuse my power. I mean, while I hold all the power, I am meek. My power is under control. It's under the control of the grace and kindness of my character. Isn't this the king you want? I mean, this is the king I want. I mean, any time that I've been under leadership like that, it's been hard, right? But that's not the way that Jesus would lead us. He doesn't lead us that way. It starts small. But let's not make the mistake of thinking that just because the kingdom is slow, because it starts small, that it won't grow and it won't overcome. It's like a train. Have you ever watched a train like making its way out of a station? Anybody ever watched that before, how slow it is? It's so slow that you are tempted to jump on it. Anybody? No, just me. Train moving slow and I'm thinking, boxcar children, man. I'm just going to like... Nobody? All right. Anyway. It's like a train picking up speed so slow that it can power forward relentlessly. Like once a train gets going, what can stop a train? It's like a disaster when a train stops before it should, right? And of course, this isn't a disaster, but I think what Jesus is saying is, man, once it starts, it cannot stop. This beginning blooms into surprising significance in surprising new life and new power, which is why Jesus can say, I have overcome the world. Because he has planted the mustard seed of the kingdom of heaven into the world. The seed, which is tiny, the smallest of seeds, can burst into a tree, a plant with enough growth that birds come and perch in its branches. And then you consider the power of yeast, right? Anybody like bake during the pandemic and read all the tips? Here's how you should, what you should do and what kind of containers you should put your dough in. Anybody know what I'm talking about? Like covered loosely. Like Jen's like, yes, yes, I know that. And obviously not by personal experience, but you know, cover loosely, right? Because if you put yeast in dough and you put it in a container, if you don't cover it loosely, it can break the container and then you can be in all sorts of trouble. So when the kingdom of heaven is planted in the soil of the world, you might wonder if it will be paved over by the man-made sidewalk of technology, empire, capitalistic greed, colonialism. You'll wonder, man, the pavement planted over the kingdom of heaven, the soil, man, there's nothing. We have just stopped the advance of the kingdom of heaven, but it's just like N.T. Wright says, you can't pave over life. You plant a seed under the pavement, and what will happen? We'll buckle that pavement and burst through. Consider for a moment that the same thing might be happening in our country. Like, look at the way God has been working to overturn harmful narratives, particularly concerning systemic racism. Like, think about that for a moment. So if you trace this work of extracting systemic racism and whiteness from our faith, you can see glimmers of the move of God all the way back to the beginning through the Hidden Underground Railroad, through Frederick Douglass, through W.E.B. Du Bois, then the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. And you could think, man, nothing is happening. Now, how do we arrive at this moment a couple summers ago? But, like, I want you to consider that maybe the Lord is doing something. Because, man, how many of you have walked through the book aisle at Target recently? Anybody? Some of you have, readers. Some of you haven't, or you just passed by on your way to something. Have you ever noticed that when you walk through the book aisle at Target, there are so many black and brown authors? Anybody notice that? And even, like, on an end cap, I saw on an end cap, like, black and brown authors that were Christians on this end cap in Target. As I walk into Target and I look at the books, that's what's actually happening. Something I think maybe is happening. I mean, here's another way that I think that we've changed. We no longer feel comfortable with white European depictions of Jesus, do we? Like, we, many of us grew up with those in our home, right? But a lot of us are kind of like, I don't know about that anymore. Well, what's happening? Could it be that the Lord is working? You know, I think that what Jesus is trying to say to his disciples is like, I have planted the kingdom of heaven in the world, continue to hope. When it seems like God is not working, he actually is. When it seems like our efforts are just, like Bishop Tutu says, a theological whistling in the dark, we remember the God whose world this is. For God so loved this world. Yes? When it seems like injustice will have its day and no oppression is in sight, remember the mustard seed and the leaven. I mean, like, I am an Asian American person, and I cannot believe that we are actually talking about Asian American Pacific Islander racism right now. I can't believe it. I never would have predicted it. I just thought, you know, well, I'll just have to deal with it. I'm just invisible. But we are actually talking about it right now. I was in Houston a few months ago, and a man knocked me over physically in Houston because he associated me with COVID. So he knocked me over. And I thought I, like, just had bumped him or something had happened, but he actually, like, you know, he, like, knocked me over. And, you know, like, before, I would have tried to ignore it. I would have just been like, okay, you know, maybe I bumped him, maybe whatever, you know. And so I sat down, and we were at a restaurant. And the funny thing is, the pastors who were with me, all of whom were white, by the way, wouldn't let me ignore it. I mean, I can't, this is the day that we're in right now. The yeast of the kingdom of heaven is working its way through the dough. And hey, I'm not saying that it's fully done yet, like time to put the dough in the oven. I'm not saying that, okay? You know, I mean, 60 pounds of flour is a lot of flour. We still have work to do. I believe it or not, racial microaggressions still happen in our church. They do, between one another. It still happened here. I mean, those of us who are in church together, loving one another because of the blood of Christ and his resurrection, we have come so far, yet we still need the yeast of the kingdom to continue to work in you and me, right? Because the leaven and the yeast is not just a parable about the reality of the kingdom of heaven working its way in the world. It's also about you and me too. The kingdom of heaven needs to work its way in us, in you and me, right? Man, we need the mustard seed of the kingdom of heaven to be planted in us, as it is when we say yes to Jesus. And we need the leaven to work its way through us. And so as we close, just a few pastoral observations for you and me. First one, no matter who you are, no matter what you've done, no matter how small life has made you, doesn't life make you feel small sometimes? You're not too small to receive the whole kingdom of heaven. Man, the kingdom of heaven is not so big that a little child could receive it. Here's the second thing. The parables teach us that we can think, like if we look at our lives, that actually no transformation is happening when something incredible is occurring in us. The Spirit of God is like leaven in us, changing us, working in us. Like most of the change that I've noticed in my life has happened after the fact, and I've had to have somebody point it out to me. Like I get so like in the weeds about my life and my transformation that I can oftentimes notice that nothing is actually happening in me while all the time the Spirit of God is working in me to change me. Amen. Anybody ever have that experience before? I mean, even when I don't, as the song says, even when I don't see it, you're working. You're moving. So what does that mean for us today? Well, I think it means that we need to be patient. And I also think that we need to be discerning, because here's the other thing. If the kingdom of heaven is slow and small, it can be easily overlooked. It can be easy to mistake the wrong thing for the kingdom. Like a church grows up overnight, gets huge, abusive right-handed power is happening within the four walls. We need discernment, yes? And how do we discern? Well, the passage gives us a clue. I wonder if the mustard seed, I wonder like when the parable of the sower, I mean, the same chapter, by the way, Matthew 13, I wonder like in the parable of the sower, if what Jesus is actually talking about is mustard seed. If you think about mustard seed strewn on the path. And so how do we discern the kingdom of heaven? Well, we look at its fruit. Yes? By their fruit, we will recognize good trees and bad trees, is what Jesus tells us. In other words, we can discern what the kingdom of heaven is by looking at its fruit. And it doesn't mean a whole lot of people necessarily. It just means that the kingdom life, the life that is in the kingdom, actually shelters more life. Birds find their roosting. All right, and finally, one last pastoral encouragement. I wonder. Okay, so this is not necessarily from the text. So this isn't like the most exegetically faithful thing. So just proper warning. So you can excise this from your memories if you'd like. But I just wonder if Jesus used this metaphor because he wanted us to imagine that once the leaven gets in us, you can't take it out. You can't take leaven out of the dough. Like once you put the leaven in, once you put the yeast in, you're like, oh man, I got to take it out. You can't do it, right? You have to start all over again. Once the leaven gets in us, I just wonder, can't take it out. And so I think that's enormous comfort for me. I don't know if it's for you. Because sometimes I'm like, man, are you with me, Jesus? Does anybody ever feel that way? Are you with me? But I think this parable can give us encouragement because the parable parable said something even more like powerful than, no, he is with you. You just can't feel him. No, the parable is actually saying, not only is he with you, he is overtaking you. The hidden power of the Spirit of God in us, changing us. Which is why we believe so much in the spiritual practices. And so we're going to do another series on that in the summer. We believe in these spiritual practices, and you saw Kiva will be leading a small group on that. We believe in them so much because we think that this is the way that we can lean in to the leavening power of the Spirit. Even though it is hidden to us, we can lean in so that life might multiply on us 160, 30 times over. Let's not forget that Jesus was so small when he arrived on this earth. Yes? Have you ever wondered why he did not come riding the clouds as king with a crown around his head, transfigured on top of the mountain? Anybody ever wondered that? Why he didn't just come? It would have made things so much easier, right? Here comes the king. That's clear. And the whole world sees it. But instead, he comes as a baby. Instead, he comes as a baby who didn't actually forcibly take a throne, but exercised instead life-handed power. We remember that he was crucified, dead, and buried. We remember that it started so small. He was raised, resurrected, but still, even then, he did not rise and vindicate himself to the whole of the Roman Empire. He revealed himself to his closest followers, maybe to 500 people or to 500 people, and then in a flash he was gone. His presence and his Spirit in us instead. And so then we, like leaven, are leavening the world. In our utter smallness, we are bringing Jesus to this entirely too big, too dark world, and he will overcome. From that small beginning, by the way, a few hundred, that mustard seed has grown to almost 2.5 billion.